From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill on The Miracle Hunter. We've got a great show ahead for you today, and it's on the heels of some pretty big news being leaked out of Rome. What I mean, I say leaked instead of, you know, promulgated as in the normal way, because the head of the Congregation for the Cause of Saints, or the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints, Cardinal Semeraro, speaking to an audience in Italy, leaked out the news that the popular future saint, Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, would be canonized in the year 2025. And this is big news. I know so many people who have a devotion to him, who are excited about him as a young man of the world who sort of sets this example that you can have your faith and the rest of your life doing well at the same time. So I think that people are so excited about Pier Giorgio Frassati. So his canonization is coming right up, as leaked out by the head of the Cause of Saints Dicastery. So we're excited today to talk with Christine Wohar. She's the author of Finding Frassati. So she'll tell us a little bit about the life of this great future saint, and she'll also tell us about what the latest and greatest is about the miracle. What do we know ahead of, or as a result of that leak? Do we know anything about the miracle that's being considered by Pope Francis and will come out in a formal declaration coming soon? We'll also be talking with Father Edward Looney about one of my favorite topics, which is Catholic travel. So people who tune into the show know I love traveling the world and looking at the shrines of the United States in our new series called Hidden Gems on EWTN. And also, of course, explore with the Miracle Hunter. I travel to the shrines of the world, and we bring those stories back to you on EWTN television. And so Father Edward Looney, he's a kindred spirit, you might say, who has traveled the world and the United States. So he's got a brand new book called Places of Grace, Travel Memoir. So we'll be talking to him about, we'll be comparing notes a little bit on places we've been and some of the great places of miracles that he's been to. So stay tuned for that one. If you're interested in checking out that show, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, coming up on May 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, is San Giovanni Rotondo. That's Explore episode where I look at the great miracle-working Saint Padre Pio. And we journey to Italy to meet the man known worldwide for healing miracles by location and exhibiting the wounds of Christ in the stigmata. This is one of my favorite episodes. And of course, he's one of the greatest miracle-working saints in history. So that's a fun episode to check out. So that'll be on the 11th of May at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And also coming up, They Might Be Saints, Sister Marie de Mondac Grance. That's coming up on May 8th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And it's the fascinating story of Sister Marie de Mondac Grance. Follow her extraordinary efforts to locate the house of Mary, the mother of Jesus, as she travels to Ephesus, Turkey, to bring this treasure back to the Catholic Church. And that's one of my favorite episodes, one of the very early episodes we did of They Might Be Saints. So it's coming back around on May 8th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. So check that one out. Later in the show, we're going to be taking a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week, where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the date in the calendar year. So for today, we've got Our Lady of the Grey from France in the 11th century, and the Might Be Saint of the Day, also from France, Blessed Jean-Martin Moyer. And the question of the week: if a saint, a future saint, is lacking a second miracle, can the Pope push them ahead to sainthood without it? And the miracle of the day: on May 4th, 1521, there was a miraculous rescue of a three-year-old named Olive by the Virgin Mary. So we'll be taking a look at that later in the program. Let's take a look at the miracle news. Each week we report on the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. Of course, we'd be relating the story of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and his miracle, but those details we'll talk about later in the program with Christine Wohar. We'll find out about the miracle that's being used towards his canonization. But there was a story coming out of Nebraska. The quote, or the title of the article, is "It's a Miracle: A Wife and Son Lay Over Quadriplegic Man in an Upstairs Bedroom as a Tornado Strikes Elkhorn, Nebraska Home." And so the ceiling is gone in one upstairs bedroom there, but you can still start inside, see it inside, stand inside it today. And volunteers helped the family pick up the pieces, discovering a cross remaining on the wall. On Friday, a quadriplegic man with multiple sclerosis was laying in his bed in that room, and without any time to move, his wife and son decided to use their bodies as a shield to protect him. That's what the report said. And this man, Frank, was struck in the head. Part of the ceiling collapsed onto them. He's now hospitalized, but expected to be A-OK, and his wife and son were unharmed. It was said that around 15 people associated with the program are helping the cleanup and salvaging what they can, allowing this family to focus on Frank in the hospital. They welcome you into their home, she said. They become more like family. It's like it wasn't even a question. Like when your family needs you, where do you go? You go to help them, and that's why we're here. So that was a quote in that article. And it's an absolutely amazing thing that happened. They said it was gut-wrenching fear that overcame them. But knowing exactly something like this was happening, that was what's going to happen. That's what the wife said in response to the feeling that she had when the roof started collapsing. But they're calling it a miracle with all three of them living through that tornado damage. So absolutely amazing. You can check out the article. I posted it to the Miracle Hunter Facebook feed. So check that one out on your own. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize for an emailer who gets the right answer. My friends who know me know I love trivia. You might find me in a bar playing pub trivia on some random night, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia. And so we'll be giving out a prize, the Miracle Hunter image of the faces of Mary. And so the question from last week was, what American saint or blessed had the most recent miracle approved by Rome? That answer was Father Michael McGivney, with the miracle of Mikey Shackle, who was cured of fetal high drops. I had the honor of meeting Mikey Shackle and his parents when we did the episode of They Might Be Saints about Father Michael McGivney. So what an amazing story. This child with basically a 0% chance of survival now is walking and talking just like any normal boy. So very exciting miracle. And that was the latest of the miracles from America that have been approved by Rome. In this week's question, we're talking today with Father Edward Looney about his travel to shrines all around the world. And the question for this week is, name the four popes who have traveled outside of Europe. Again, that question is, name the four popes who've traveled outside of Europe. If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or questions@miraclehunter.com, and we'll see who's the fastest with the correct answer. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Edward Looney, author of Places of Grace, about his travel to shrines around the world. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show or tune into my EWTN series called Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs every Saturday at 5 p.m. Central Time, know that I love to travel the world and I love to see shrines all over the world. And my new series called Hidden Gems, which I am not the host of, but the executive producer of, that's another series which touches on the shrines of the United States, those hidden gems, those places that people didn't even know were in their own backyard. And we have a great new book that's just come out from a friend of the show. It's Father Edward Looney, and it's along those same lines. The name is Places of Grace, My Visit to Shrines, Chapels, Graves, and Monasteries, and the Graces I Received, again, by Father Edward Looney. And this is a similar idea that kind of highlights the places that Father has traveled to all over the United States and the world, and perhaps they're hidden gems for some people, and some of them are big-name shrines as well. So we're so excited to welcome back to the show Father Edward Looney.
Well, thanks so much, Michael, and congratulations on producing Hidden Gems. I guess I didn't know about it, but that's a show right up my alley, so I'm going to look for it and tune in for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a brand new series that's just sort of on its way out on its way out to the airwaves, I should say, on EWTN. So we'll see more episodes airing throughout the year. But I think we both share this kind of love of shrines and travel and perhaps pilgrimage, because it's not just it's not just all fun and sun to go to the beautiful places of the world and see the shrines that are there. There's an actual spiritual component to it, and I think that that's very important. And you reveal that in your book, My Visits to Shrines, from Places of Grace is the title. And your book is broken down to some very interesting sections: Marian apparitions, shrines, devotional shrines to Mary, chapels and grottos, shrines to saints, graves of holy men and women, and monasteries. You have them laid out very nicely in the book. And of course, this being the Miracle Hunter radio show, we love talking about Marian apparitions. So talk a little bit about your worldwide travels and some of the places you've chosen to visit.
Yeah, so especially when it comes to the Marian apparition sites, I've visited more than what I wrote about. I just did kind of a smattering of apparitions that I thought, you know, you could write something about, but also just that there was a received grace that was easily nameable. And, you know, one of the things I realize is that as I write about my experiences at these holy places, is that what I receive from God as a grace might not be the same grace that you receive. And so God is pouring out his grace. He's giving these gifts to us when we visit these holy places. And, like, there are places that have a singular grace. So, like, there's the Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche, not an apparition site, but, like, the grace of that place is conception for couples struggling with fertility. Lots of people go there. They ask Mary's intercession. They receive that grace. So there's a singular grace. And I think about Champion, Wisconsin, for example, the Marian apparition received by Adele in 1859. And so if you think about the apparition, the story, the shrine itself, well, I think that a singular grace of the shrine might be conversion. Mary says, "I'm the Queen of Heaven who prays for the conversion of sinners." So it could be a place you go to pray for the conversion of loved ones. Mary told Adele to gather the children, teach them what they need to know. So could be the grace of catechesis. So catechists go there to really receive grace from the intercession of Our Lady to be a bold catechist and teacher, defender of the faith. So those are singular graces. But, you know, for me, the individual grace I would say that I received when I visited Champion, and this was way back when I was a wee lad discerning a vocation of the priesthood, was the grace of saying yes. Because the shrine had been important to me growing up. I went there in eighth grade. It was actually the place where I remember, I would call it the place of my first pilgrimage ever in life.
Wow.
So go there on my pilgrimage as an eighth grader. But then, you know, in high school, college, it would become a very instrumental place in discernment and praying and asking Our Lady's intercession. But when I was discerning priesthood between a diocesan priest and a religious priest, because there was an order I was actively applying to, I was at the shrine and one day serving at Mass there, and the responsorial psalm said, "Lord, this is the people that longs to see your face." And it was in that moment that I kind of just realized, well, this is where God is calling me right now. And this is the people that I know. And I think this is where my call is, to diocesan priesthood. So for me, I would say that the grace of the shrine for me was the grace of saying yes. But I said yes to the calling to the priesthood of going to the seminary and all of that. And you know what? It's a place where when I return, sometimes I go when I'm at kind of a crossroads and discerning something. And so I pray for that grace of saying yes to what God's will is. And that's exactly what Adele did throughout her life, too. She did God's will, and she said yes to what Our Lady asked, and she said yes to the Lord.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Father Edward Looney about his brand new book, Places of Grace, My Visits to Shrines, Chapels, Graves, and Monasteries, and the Graces I Received. And that's available on Amazon. And of course, I love visiting these shrines related to Marian apparitions and the devotional sites related to Mary as well. But in your book, you also have a few locations that we might say have some connection to miracles. And that's always an interest of mine as well. And there's a place in Santa Fe, New Mexico, in which you highlight some miracles, the grace of miracles. Tell us a little bit about the Chapel Chimayo in Mexico, New Mexico.
Oh, so I actually, you know, I have in mind, and so I know what you're speaking of, That special place with the dirt, and I've been there. But kind of for me, when I think of Santa Fe, I always think of and maybe it's Albuquerque. The staircase of St. Joseph and the convent there. That you know, these nuns, they prayed to have the staircase built in their chapel. Their chapel of their monastery had no staircase. They built this new chapel, and so they prayed and they asked the intercession of St. Joseph. And you know, kind of a lot of different miracles surrounded it. The fact that this kind of unknown person at the time, and now that identity of that person is known, but this unknown stranger shows up, gives the proposal, says, this is what I think. You know, everybody said, you can't build a staircase. And this guy says, we can build a staircase. It'll be spiral. And then architects look at the staircase and they say that there's, you know, the way that it's crafted and put together, it's not held together by nails. It's held together by really glue and dowels and rods and stuff. And so like the very fact that it's standing is miraculous, like defies kind of the understanding of people that look at it. So I think, you know, it just gives us a sense of when we pray that we receive a grace. And when we pray, we can ask bold things and God will show up and God will deliver, just as those nuns through the intercession of St. Joseph received the staircase. But, you know, it's just kind of surrounded with this aura of the miraculous in many different ways.
And then there's this Cold Spring Chapel in Minnesota. Tell us a little bit about the miracle connection there.
Yeah, so it's known a lot by the locals as the Grasshopper Chapel. And really the story is that in the late 1800s, so probably 1870s, 1880s, there was like a plague of locusts, a plague of grasshoppers that was just really destroying the crop. It was impacting the economy and everything. And so essentially, even the state government, they realized that this problem was beyond their control and that they needed the help of the Almighty, because they actually called for a statewide day of prayer and penance and reparation so that this plague, this epidemic of grasshoppers would come to an end. Well, you have this Benedictine priest, and if memory serves, his name is Father Boniface. And Father Boniface, he really feels called to go up, you know, kind of on this higher point in Cold Spring, and to lead the people there, to pray the rosary, to ask Our Lady to deliver them. And they make a promise that day. They say to the Lord and they say to Our Lady, you know, if you deliver us from these grasshoppers, we will build you a chapel. And on every Saturday for the next 20 years or 30 years, we will say Mass in this chapel when it's possible. And so they kind of make this pledge, an offering to Our Lord and to Our Lady. And so as soon as they do that, well, wouldn't you know that they do experience the grace of a miracle, that kind of the grasshoppers subside and the crops begin to grow again and the economy is restored. Now, the chapel, the original chapel, was destroyed in a tornado a number of years ago. So they've rebuilt the chapel since, and so it's a newer chapel. But that chapel then is simply a reminder, really, of the fact that a governor said, let's unite as a state and pray. It's a reminder of their asking God for help, and it's a reminder to them that God delivered as they asked for help as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's what a fascinating miracle story. There's miracles of all sorts, as we know, Father, happening all around the world. What a fascinating story. And as we wrap up the interview today, I notice under your section of graves of holy men and women, of course, I'm a Chicago guy myself, so was excited to see you featuring Mother Maria Kalpis, and that is somebody that we featured on an episode of They Might Be Saints on EWTN. Tell us a little bit your motivation for going to that that Lithuanian order of nuns.
Yeah, so, you know, I was educated down on Mundelein, and so my familiarity with the Sisters of St. Casimir even predate that, because there was a Benedictine monk where I went to seminary at Conception Abbey, Father Samuel, and he grew up in the Lithuanian village, was Lithuanian in his heritage, and so he had a great love for the Sisters of St. Casimir. So Father Samuel would take us on a senior pilgrimage, and essentially it was to St. Louis, and then he took us to Chicago. Basically, see two different seminaries, see holy sites. For Chicago, it was really a homecoming for him, too, to go home, see the places of his childhood, things like that. But so he had a great love for the Sisters of St. Casimir. And I remember when we were at the seminary in St. Louis, he didn't want to celebrate at Mass. He wanted to say his own Mass and offer his own attention for the sisters. So, and I participated in that private Mass that Father Samuel celebrated. Not everybody did. Others went to the community Mass at the seminary. And so I guess it just spoke to me about his great love for these women religious and the impact that they made in his life. And we ended up staying at the convent when we went there back on that senior pilgrimage of seminary. And so Father Samuel introduced me to Venerable Maria Coppice. And, you know, kind of not a story that I remembered, but I always wanted to get back there. And I never did during my time at Mundelein. It wasn't, you know, for 11, 12 years later that I got back. But finally I went, and it just so happened to be the Feast of St. Casimir. But, you know, for me, it was the fact that someone else introduced me to who this person was. And so because he took me there so many years ago, I was able to return, and I was able to pray there and just kind of revisit and walk down that memory lane, but also learn more about this venerable sister and be able to share her story so that others might be inspired by her life and her witness of a consecrated life.
Absolutely. And the name of the book is Places of Grace. We've been talking with author Father Edward Looney today about all the places he's visited around the world, the shrines, chapels, graves, and monasteries, and the graces I received. And as we've heard in this interview, he talks about the various graces that he identified at each of these places that impacted his life. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Edward Looney, for joining us on today's program, talking to us about your incredible travels all around the world. And for people who want to pick up this book called Places of Grace, what's the best way that they can do that?
Yeah, unfortunately, right now, I would say it has to be Amazon. That's kind of the main distributor right now, hoping to get it at the religious catalog, hoping to get it elsewhere. But that's the main place right now. So hopefully you can encounter these places of grace. And during the summer, as you make your travels, to find those places along the way as you vacation.
Wonderful. And your website for your other books and your speaking engagements and your other activities, Father, where can people go?
Yeah, I have a website, edwardlooney.com. I don't have the password anymore for it. It got, I don't know, lost or it corrupted or something. So I don't update it anymore. So social media is the best place. My handle is @FREdwardLooney.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Edward Looney, for joining us on today's program.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Michael.
God bless. That was Father Edward Looney talking to us about his travels around the United States and around the world and visiting those places of grace. Check out that book, Places of Grace. You can find it on Amazon. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter. On EWTN, here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting those emails, and I try to answer those when I have time and when I can on the show. And I also love the questions that I get in question and answer sessions when I'm speaking. So I speak something like 10 to 20 times a year at different Catholic shrines or parishes or events, conferences. And so I've been talking a lot about Eucharistic miracles these days. So if your shrine or your church or your conference needs a speaker about Eucharistic miracles, go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab. You can get a hold of me that way. And we had a great question coming in through email this past week. It was, Dear Miracle Hunter, can the Pope override the need for the second miracle in a canonization? Thank you, Larry. Well, thanks, Larry, for your question, and it's a good one. Can the Pope override the need for the second miracle in a canonization? Well, you might say something like, as the Pope can do anything in the entire Catholic world. There's no limits, and including in the case of canonizations. So the Pope can actually do something called equipollent or equivalent canonization, where if the normally, if there aren't two miracles, if there are just one miracle, the Pope may push the cause along and have the person be canonized. And we saw that, of course, in the United States when the Pope, when Pope Francis visited the United States some years ago, he canonized Blessed Junipero Serra. And Junipero Serra was lacking that second miracle, but in order to do a canonization stateside while he was here, and perhaps also because Junipero Serra was deserving of being named a saint, more importantly, he pushed ahead and pushed aside that need for the second miracle. So we saw Blessed Junipero Serra be declared Saint Junipero Serra. And there are numerous other cases of equivalent canonization throughout the centuries where a pope has done this. And most typically, like I said, there's one miracle in place, and the Pope will go ahead and will make that decision. A recent case, I think last year or so, Margaret Costello, she was a saint from centuries ago, and the Pope moved her ahead on the path to sainthood and declared her a saint in an act of equivalent canonization as well. So we see this for some of these older saints who are perhaps languishing in that need for that second miracle. It's sometimes alleviated or lifted by the Pope at the time. So thanks so much, Larry, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be reading your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. For today's day, we have Our Lady of the Grey from France in the 11th century. And people who tune into this show know that for each and every day of the calendar year, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly with the day's date. And of course, we're talking about Fatima on May 13th, or Lourdes February 11th, or Guadalupe December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. So for today's day, we've got Our Lady of the Grey from France. And the story goes that an oak tree in the shape of a cross has become a place of devotion in the 13th century in the Flemish town of Montague. And in the next century, the shrine became renowned for an immovable statue of the Virgin that was placed on the tree, and it fell. In the year 1568, Protestants destroyed the sanctuary, and the tree was cut down in 1604. And a poor elderly widow, Jean Bonnet, made a pilgrimage a decade later to Montague, where she was brought a piece of the sacred oak back to her home in eastern France. And a sculptor named Jean, he carved a statue of the Virgin from it, and he modeled it after the original from Belgium. From 1616 until the French Revolution, the statue wrought many miracles. It was reported at the Capuchin Monastery in the town of Grey, 37 miles away. And when the monks were driven from their monastery, a family took the sacred image into hiding until it was placed in Grey's parish until safer times. And a silver statue covered in gold and jewels was donated by Cardinal Matthew, the Archbishop of Bassingjon, in thanksgiving for the end of a cholera epidemic. He dedicated the image on May 4th, 1851, at a ceremony attended by many priests, faithful, and with the artillery there and a bell salute. And from then on, the feast of Our Lady of the Grey was celebrated in that parish with a procession every May 4th. And so that is Our Lady of the Grey from France in the 11th century. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions that line up to every day of the calendar year, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com, or you connect to the Facebook page with over 10,000 followers, or you can download the free app from the Apple iOS App Store. So you can connect to that and download the free app, 365 Days with Mary, Marian Calendar. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week, where we try to find a miracle that lines up exactly to the day's date. On May 4th, in the year 1521, in the place of Cori, Italy, in the title of Our Lady of Salvation, with a visionary, Olivia Lanesse, at the age of 3. And this sanctuary is the place where the Madonna went to rescue a 3-year-old girl named Olive, or Olivia, during a storm, and who was found only after 8 days. And when she told her story, all the church and the clergy and the magistrates went in procession to the mountain, where they unearthed a fresco with the image of the Virgin on throne, holding the arm of the child in blessing. And the 14th century fresco with many successive overlays probably belonged in an ancient chapel. So on the site, the first church was consecrated in 1537 to Our Lady of the Broom, and numerous miracles attributed to the Virgin the following year led, in addition to the change of the title, to Our Lady of Salvation. And so that was a miracle that related to a young girl, Olive Lanessi, age 3, that was said to be saved by Our Lady of Salvation. For more information on the miracle of the day, you can connect to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week where we talk about people on the path to sainthood. Of course, we're talking about miracle workers to martyrs, those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. These are the people that make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And we focus on the people who are servants of God, venerables, blesseds, before they have all their miracles recognized by Rome and are declared official saints. And so we always like to keep you up to date on the sainthood news. And of course, the news related to Pier Giorgio Frassati was the big news this week, and we'll be talking about this soon. But recently, the Pope received an audience, His Reverence Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized the Dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Angelina Parini. She was a faithful laywoman born on March 30th, 1922, in Selle di Sala in Italy, and she died there on October 2nd in 1940. And according to the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints website, she was a faithful laywoman, and she lived in intense apostolate, dealing with the human and Christian education of girls towards whom she spent herself with tenderness and kindness, and her example of balance and spiritual maturity was contagious not only for the girls, but also for their families. And again, so that is now Venerable Angelina Parini. With one miracle recognized by Rome, she will become Blessed Angelina. And for more information on They Might Be Saints, go to theymightbesaints.com. And today we also look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. That's the person whose feast day or death anniversary lines up exactly to the day in the calendar year, today being May 4th. And so for today's day, we have Blessed Jean-Martin Moyer. She was the sixth of 13 children born to Jean Moyer and Catherine Demange, studied at the College of Pont-à-Mousson, the Jesuit College at Strasbourg, and at the Seminary of Saint-Simon at Metz in France. He was ordained on March 9, 1754 in the Diocese of Metz and founded schools for poor country children. He founded the Congregation of the Sisters of Divine Providence in 1762, and he became the superior of the seminary. He joined the Parish Mission Society in 1769, missionary to China, and he was repeatedly harassed and imprisoned for spreading the faith. In 1782, he founded the Christian Virgins, the group of religious women who followed the rules of the Congregation of Providence, but there was no formal congregation. They cared for the sick, taught Christianity to women and children in their own homes. With his health failing, Father Moyer returned to France in 1784, where he resumed direction of the Sisters of Divine Providence, and he preached at missions in Lorraine and Alsace in France. He was exiled from France in 1791 as part of the French Revolution, and he and the sisters moved to Trier. And when French troops captured the city, typhoid fever broke out, and he and the sisters devoted themselves in hospital work, where he died of the disease himself. What an incredible life. And so he was born on January 27, 1730, and he died on February 8, 1793, in Trier. He died of typhoid fever. And he was declared venerable by Pope Leo XIII in 1891, and Pope Pius XII beatified him in 1954 on November 21st. With one miracle, Blessed Jean-Martin Moyer will go on to become Saint Jean-Martin. And if we want to follow the series They Might Be Saints, which airs every week on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, this week's episode of Sister Marie de Mondragrance looks at the fascinating story of Sister Marie de Mondragrance, and we can follow her extraordinary efforts to locate the House of Mary, the Mother of Jesus, as she travels to Ephesus, Turkey, to bring this treasure to the Catholic Church. Again, we'll be looking at the life of Sister Marie de Mondragrance on the next episode of They Might Be Saints. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Christine Wohar, the author of Finding Frassati, about the news of the impending canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. Stay with us for that.
Now, Back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who follow this show know that I love talking about the saints, and I love tracking the causes of saints when people move along from servant of God to venerable to blessed and then to saint. And there's someone in our Catholic Church that I think a lot of people, young people especially, young Catholics, are excited about, and that's Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. And there was some news that broke this last week on the National Catholic Register, picking up a story from Avvenire in Italy, that it said that Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, who's the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, he was speaking in front of Catholic Action's National Assembly in Italy recently, and he said that Pier Giorgio Frassati's canonization was, quote, on the horizon. Now, this has been picked up by news outlets all over the world to imply that his canonization was imminent. We certainly don't have a miracle that's been validated by Rome and decree promulgated, but it sounds like, being that Cardinal Marcello Semeraro is the head of the sainthood office in Rome, he knows what's happening next, or we assume he does anyway. So it's exciting news, or at least a preview of some exciting news. And we're so excited today because we're joined today by Christine Wohar. She's the executive director of Frassati USA and author of the book Finding Frassati. We welcome back to the program today, Christine Wohar.
Thank you. Michael, you forgot one big piece of information, that when Cardinal Semeraro let that statement go, he was interrupted by a long applause, as I think the whole world is applauding right now. Long applause greeted that statement that he made.
Absolutely. And why is he such a popular saint? I think it's kind of obvious, but why the worldwide attention and the excitement for the impending canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati?
Well, you know, I think that, how do I say this without saying anything that would be critical? I think that Pier Giorgio has been, like, canonized by the people the world over, and that the church is kind of bringing, you know, and supporting that, or just putting the seal of approval on that. And I know that I don't want to minimize the role of the Dicastery for the Causes of the Saints or the Vatican's role in the canonization process. But I think in the case of Pier Giorgio, it's long overdue. And the reason why he has such a worldwide impact, really from people of all ages, but particularly youth, young adults, is because he is so relatable to the lay person. We don't have that many examples of lay saints like this. Modern, he looks like us, he lived our lives, you know, so current, he had our struggles. And it just, the relatability of him is the number one thing that I have constantly been told of throughout the years that I've been working on promoting his spirituality. So I think that's why it's so exciting. It's like we're being validated in a way by the canonization of Blessed Pier Giorgio, you know, being made official.
Yeah, it's so exciting. And of course, we have to wait until Pope Francis sits down with Cardinal Semeraro in one of their monthly, it seems, meetings, and then they issue some statements. And of course, when it comes to the advancing of a cause from venerable to blessed and then blessed to saint, we need in the Catholic Church miracles that show the intercession of that saint. And there's been no talk of the miracle that perhaps is associated with this impending decree. Do you have any insight to what miracle may be being considered for this?
I do have some insight. A miracle was reported actually to Frassati USA through our website, where we have a place for you to report favors received. And so I am familiar with the case that's being considered for the canonization miracle. And since the protocol has not been up to this point to release it, I'm not going to share anything about it other than to say it is an American miracle. And it is a man from America.
Great.
A case here in America, which I'm I'm very happy about that.
So yeah, there's only been something like 30 cases from the United States throughout history for American saints and saints around the world. So this would join a very small number if this is the one, in fact, that Rome is looking at and will be using to boost the cause along to the next level of sainthood.
Oh, I didn't realize that, because I thought the miracles for St. Faustina, were they both from America?
You're correct. Both miracles of Saint Faustina were from America, and there are other ones.
Only that handful. I did not realize that. Well, that's even that's even more exciting. I did have a conversation with one of Pier Giorgio's nieces years ago. We were sitting in the family home in Italy, and I said, the miracle is going to come from the United States. And she teased me about that to all of the other dinner guests. You know, Christine is claiming the miracle will come from the United States. And so I'm ecstatic that it will be an American miracle.
Well, great. We're hopeful that that is indeed the one that they'll be considering. So we're talking today with Christine Wohar, the executive director of Frassati USA and author of the book Finding Frassati. And turning back to his life, you mentioned that he was a maybe a regular guy or somebody who's very relatable that we can all connect with on a very basic level. And he died at the age of 24. And so these young saints, you might say, always catch the attention of the Catholic faithful. But he was, we talk about him being an outdoorsman, climbing mountains, but he was really known as a Third Order Dominican for reaching out in a charitable way to others. Talk a little bit about those things, and to me, this separates him from the average guy or the regular guy. He lived out all the Beatitudes, as John Paul II said. Pier Giorgio do in his life of reaching out to others?
Yes, I think that he had really the grace of just a great charism of charity, because throughout his life, even as a young boy, there's famous stories of a poor woman that knocked on the door when he was a young boy, and she was a beggar, and he saw that she had a child with no shoes, and he took off his own shoes to give to her. There's a story of him going to a kindergarten type school with his grandfather and seeing a boy who had some skin disorder sitting ostracized by himself. And Pier Giorgio went and sat by him and shared his soup, one scoop for you, spoon for you, one spoon for me, basically just to not have that boy be isolated. And this went on and progressed throughout his life. So we like to say that he had, a crescendo, like more of a crescendo throughout his life in his works of charity. Pier Giorgio said, "What would life be without acts of charity?" And it was really more his Vincentian spirituality. Although he was a lay Dominican, when he was in high school, he was introduced by the Jesuit fathers, actually, because he had so many spiritual influences, the Salesian fathers, the Jesuit fathers, Dominicans. Became a member of the St. Vincent de Paul conference there as a teenager when the World War I soldiers were returning from the war, and he saw how devastated some of them were, their lives, their physical health, and so on. That's when he really became involved at the level that he continued throughout the next 7 years of his life when he died, as you said, at age 24. He later joined another conference of St. Vincent de Paul, and this was, I think, his identity. Everybody knew if you needed something, go to Frassati, but he was also known as the guy with the empty pockets. He was always broke because he was giving things away. And so he's famously known to have said, when asked, "Pier Giorgio, why do you ride third class on the train? You know, your father's just a big, important man. You could ride first class." But his answer was he rode third class because there was no fourth class. And he was giving away his money for the bus, the tram, and running home, just so he could, anything he could do to serve the poor. And when his family would go on vacations, he would stay in Turin and say, "If everybody leaves, who will care for the poor?" And his last gesture when he was laying, was he was dying. He died on a Saturday night, but on Friday, when they realized how sick he was, he had asked for a pen and a paper, and he wrote out, it's a well-known image of his handwriting, already paralyzed by the polio that took his life, instructions for a friend at the Conference of St. Vincent de Paul that was meeting that night. So always thinking of what we call his poor. And that was really the beginning of his canonization process, because when he died, thousands of people filled the streets, and that's when the family realized that his father said to his mother, "We didn't know our son," because they had no idea how many lives he had touched. So that charism, that grace of, he saw Christ in others. He said, "Jesus comes to me every day in Holy Communion, and I repay him in my miserable way by serving the poor." So he did these acts of charity because he was such a Eucharistic young man that he received the Lord daily, and then he brought the Lord through those, the works of service and charity and love to the people around him. And it wasn't because he was from a wealthy family. It wasn't writing a check or, you know, he was invested in his works of charity. He played with the children. He brushed their hair. He spent time with the poor, the sick, those who had terrible diseases. He was present in their lives. He respected their dignity. He helped them. One friend said, "Why can't we just come in, you know, drive the family car, and why do we have to do things this way?" And he said, "Remember, when you see these people, you're meeting Christ. And I see a light around them, a light that we don't have." So he saw Christ in everyone he met, and that allowed him to just very fluidly, very spontaneously, very organically from within his soul, live that life of charity.
Amazing. We're talking today with Christine Wohar, the executive director of Frassati USA and author of the book Finding Frassati. And we're talking today because of the news that was leaked, or at least the word got out that potentially we see, and I think it's very likely if it's the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints saying it, that in the year 2025, a jubilee year, we'll see the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. And, of course, young people and otherwise around the world will celebrate this canonization if it does come to be, as is being hinted at right now. What is it, do you think, that we can, everybody's going to learn so much more about his life. Of course, you're an expert on his life, but others who might not be, who will be hearing that name for the first time, will really be looking at his life again in a new way. What are the things that we can take away from Pier Giorgio's life and bring to our own lives of faith?
Well, I think the pillars of Pier Giorgio's life were the Eucharist and his love for Our Lady. And so the key I like to stress about Pier Giorgio is what he did was he lived the fundamentals of the faith with intention. So everything he did, we can do. Now, we just talked about his works of charity, and maybe that's a little bit along the lines of Mother Teresa. You know, he had some extra grace to deal with people who were the worst cases, and maybe that everybody, you know, has a limit on how much they can tolerate things like that or do. But as far as his spirituality and how he got, I think, to this point and being raised to the highest altar in the church, is from practicing the fundamentals of the faith that we all can do. He loved the Blessed Mother. He was faithful to praying the rosary. He was a late Dominican, and so he did the little office of the Blessed Virgin Mary. He was seen often kneeling at his bed, falling asleep, praying the rosary. Well, every one of us can pray the rosary. He made a point from the time he was 12 years old, when he received permission to receive daily communion, which was just a new thing back then. That was an appointment with the Lord he kept every day of his life. And I know everyone can't go daily as he did, but we could probably at least go one more time during the week. But how we receive the Lord, even if it's only on Sunday. Pier Giorgio was so collected and recollected at Mass. He went to Eucharistic adoration. He read Scripture. He was faithful to always doing his prayers. His prayer books were worn out, as his sister said. He read the lives of the saints. Pier Giorgio said to live without the faith is not living but existing, and that we should never just exist but live. So even though he had all of the material comforts around him, he knew there was something more, and that something more was life with Christ. And so I think that's what we can take away from the story of Pier Giorgio is, he, as Pope John Paul said when he beatified him in 1990, he said he testifies that holiness is possible for everyone. And what I see in Pier Giorgio often that convicts me is I can make an excuse and say, well, I can't be like this saint or that saint. But when it comes to Pier Giorgio, there is no excuse. He takes away all of my excuses. I can do better. I can be more intentional about how I live my faith, pray the rosary, read Scripture, how he made the sign of the cross with reverence, his joy that he brought into his relationships with his friends, how he cared for people, how he showed dignity to the people around him. I mean, none of these things are things that are beyond our ability to do on a daily basis. And so I think that's really the infusion of joy that he was known as a joyful, happy, practical, joking type of guy. So he knew how to find joy in his daily life, even in the midst of his suffering. Everybody has a cross. We're all carrying a cross. He shows us how to do it. He shows us how to be better Catholics. He shows us how to love one another. He shows, you know, these are all things that are within our, you know, I don't have to be a priest or a nun or a cardinal or a bishop or, you know, some super saint who lives in poverty or destitution, or I don't have to be picking up, you know, people on the streets like Mother Teresa. I just have to be better each day in how I live my life. And for Pier Giorgio, it was a 24/7, you know, we compartmentalize our faith to that 1 hour on Sunday. And Pier Giorgio shows us how to do it, you know, all day, every day. And he shows that we can do it. You know, so he challenges us in saying, these are regular things that the Catholic Church asks us to do and wonderful opportunities the Church gives us to grow in holiness. And, hey, here's a guy who did it. He had fun. He was a great athlete, had friends. His parents had a bad marriage. He wasn't the best student. He had, you know, a girlfriend, different things in his life. But fundamentally, he had that love for the Eucharist, the love for Our Lady, the love for the Church. And those are all things we can do. We can emulate and imitate.
Very well put. We've been talking today with Christine Wohar from the Frasada USA organization. If you would, Christine, tell us where people can find out more about Frasada USA and what they might find on your website.
Sure. The website is frasadausa.org. And what you'll find there is just a lot of information about Blessed Pier Giorgio. What Frasada USA tries to do is provide the most accurate information, because there's a lot of misinformation out there for some reason. And so you'll learn. You'd be able to learn a lot. And I'm actually excited to tell you that we're about to start a new initiative, which was in the planning, but now is perfectly timed. It's called Team Frasada, and this will be more of like an online community for people all around the world, because I do hear from people all around the English-speaking world who have a love for Pier Giorgio, but they have no group around their area or no way to be a part of something. So we are all going to journey together toward this great moment of canonization together through Team Frasada, and that information is going to be released very soon. So frasadausa.org, it's really everything that we can think of from time to time to put there to learn about his life and his family. And I did just want to add one other thing. The Bishop of Biella, Biella is the region of Italy where Pier Giorgio's family has a summer home. The Bishop of Biella, Bishop Roberto Farinella, he also issued a statement also citing Cardinal Semeraro, but I think Bishop Farinella probably had some extra conversations, but also expressing the great joy of this upcoming event. So I love the way you said you were tracking, you know, the progress of the saints. I think this tracking is now going, we're getting really close. We're getting really close, and it's coming from more and more official sources. And so, yeah. So anything that we can find out, we'll have there at frasadausa.org. And from there, you can get to our Facebook and Instagram, YouTube pages, and all of those things.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Christine Wohar, Executive Director of Frasada USA. I encourage people to check that out at frasadausa.org. Thank you so much for being on this program today. And we're all going to be praying for the upcoming canonization of Pier Giorgio Frasada. Thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
God bless. That was Christine Wohar from Frasada USA. Check them out at frasadausa.org. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Father Edward Looney, author of Places of Grace, and also Christine Wohar, talking to us about the news about Pier Giorgio Frassati. Check out my episode, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, coming up about San Giovanni Rotondo on May 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And Padre Pio, perhaps one of the greatest miracle-working saints, is the latest subject, Journey to Italy with Me, to meet the man known worldwide for healing miracles by location and exhibiting the wounds of Christ in the stigmata. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.